This podcast is brought to you by the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania.
Well, the world of influencer marketing has grown exponentially in the last decade or so. But did you know that there are two types of influencers, the mega and the micro influencers? One has more followers, but the other may be able to provide better value. New research looks at which may be better factored around follower elasticity. Ryan Du is assistant professor of marketing here at the Wharton School, part of the research team that looked at this, and he joins us right now. Ryan, pleasure to have you with us today.
Hi, Dan. Thanks. Happy to be here.
Thank you, sir. So let's start out with the differences between these two types of influencers, because I think a lot of people may not even realize that there are two realistically. What was it that you wanted to look at in terms of the differences of both of these, along with maybe even some of the benefits?
Right. So when we think about influencers, we're really talking about their popularity, like how many followers does this person have on a platform. So in fact, there's more than just two types. There's really a whole spectrum of types. But what when we're talking about kind of these two, mega versus micro, with the mega influencers, we're talking about people who have millions of followers. So you can think about people who are celebrities like Beyonce or Cristiano Ronaldo. But you can also think of people who have kind of become famous organically through these platforms, like, for instance, the dumpster diving mama who has 3 million followers on TikTok, who posts videos of things that she finds in dumpsters. On the other hand, when we think about kind of smaller scale influencers, we're talking about people, well, with fewer followers. So they definitely have more followers than I do, but they're kind of less famous than these big celebrities. Think like 10 to 50,000 followers. And so, like you said, there's been this debate that's been ongoing in the influencer marketing industry. Obviously, these mega influencers have this just massive platform. When they post something, just by default, millions of people can potentially get exposed to these videos. And so if a company partners with them, gets them to endorse their product or use their product when they're creating content, of course, there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on that video. The downside is it's pretty expensive. Allegedly, if you want Cristiano Ronaldo to post a video of your product, that's going to cost you upwards of $2 billion per post. On the other hand, you look at some of these micro influencers, many of these people are famous within a small niche. So they have this kind of enthusiastic follower base interested in some real specific thing like cooking or beauty or something like this. And they cost a lot less than $2 billion per post. And so this is kind of the debate. It's to what degree is it really worth it for us to pay more for these big name people, or can we kind of make do, so to speak, maybe even more than make do, by strategically targeting some of these smaller scale influencers? That's really what we wanted to kind of look at in a rigorous way.
So take us through this framework that you're using to try and do that, and it brings in this concept of follower elasticity.
Right. So, I mean, first, let me just say there's many reasons why you might want to choose one influencer or another type. So, for instance, one thing that obviously matters is some kind of match with the brand or with the product. Oftentimes, you might also care about like how easy it is to collaborate with these different types of influencers. So often, the kind of big influencers might have more experience working with companies, maybe easier to do that. But what we wanted to look at is really specifically that role of popularity. Basically, if you could pay for more followers, should you? Is it worth it? Now, of course, that question is kind of a bit ridiculous, right? You can't obviously just like change somebody's follower count, can't just give them followers. But very often you may find yourself in a situation where you have a bunch of influencers who match with your brand, who are willing to collaborate with you, but may vary in terms of kind of how popular they are. And so to really figure out kind of how that popularity translates into the reach of videos, what we did is we went on TikTok, kind of the leading platform for this kind of influencer marketing, and we downloaded and tracked tons and tons of videos. We tracked their performance over time. We also captured a bunch of data about the creators of these videos. And so you might think then with this kind of massive data, answering the question of how does popularity translate into reach, You might think that this is just as easy as okay, let's match the number of followers to how many views the videos get, and we're good. The thing is, there are lots of factors that determine both of these variables. So, for instance, think about somebody who posts funny cat videos. It could be that this person got popular because they make really good videos, and then that popularity translated into their videos getting a lot of exposure on the platform. They have lots of followers, so their videos get more views. But it could also be that TikTok's algorithm knows that people love cat videos. And so it promotes that person's videos a lot, regardless of how popular the creator is, just because these videos are about cats. It could even be some combination of all of these stories. Maybe popularity matters more or less, depending on the types of videos that people post. And so what we really need to be able to do is we really need to be able to think about that relationship between how popular the influencer is and how the reach of their videos, while also thinking about the types of videos that they're posting. That is, we really need to be able to quantify kind of what is the video about. So what we do is we take an AI algorithm. You can think of it similar to the generative AI algorithms that have been all over the news recently. And we use it to kind of quantify what a video is about. We then combine that with another predictive model that predicts from how popular the influencer is and the type of content they're posting, we predict how popular their videos are going to be, the reach of those videos. And we use this to compute, as you've mentioned, this thing called a follower elasticity. So elasticities are important in many types of data-driven modeling, marketing. They basically measure responsiveness. So if I'm going to increase this thing by a little bit, how much does the variable I care about respond? So that sounds very technical, but let me give a few examples. In pricing, we care about price elasticity. So if I change the price by a little bit, how much less are people going to buy? In advertising, we think about ad elasticity. If I spend just a little bit more on advertising, how much will that drive revenue? Here, we're thinking about if I spend just a little bit more to get a few more followers, how many more views are my videos going to get? And we find that this quantity is really important for determining optimal influencer partnerships.
For the advertisers or the companies that are using this, there's such a great focus on popularity, but that cost component is an important qualifier in this process as well.
Right. The basic thing that we find kind of almost universally, with a few exceptions, which I can talk about, but we find almost universally that this follower elasticity, meaning basically the bang for the buck that you're getting, decreases pretty dramatically as popularity goes up. So what that means is for every additional kind of dollar, every additional follower that you're paying for, you're getting less and less and less for that. So, of course, more popular influencers, their videos might be seen by more people. The question is it worth it to you to pay that much to get kind of those incremental views? The kind of the bang for your buck we find is almost always decreasing, with a few exceptions. Those exceptions are, for instance, often on TikTok, brands will launch these contests, where the kind of idea is they provide some template and you design videos according to that template. And the idea is to kind of get people to socialize with the brand, to socialize with each other by making these kinds of videos about the brand. In these cases, we find that there isn't really this decreasing effect of follower elasticity. And so basically kind of your bang for the buck is the same all the way through from the micro-influencers to the mega-influencers. And so in these cases, right, it really kind of is beneficial to get these super popular influencers.
What do you think that this component of follower elasticity brings to the table in terms of best measuring influencer impact?
So what I think the follower elasticity does is it takes kind of, so influencer marketing, like you mentioned, has just grown like crazy the past few years. And because of this explosive growth, I don't think we don't have the sort of measurement frameworks that exist in other sort of more mature types of marketing. So whereas for pricing or advertising, there's established models and elasticities are kind of baked into how people think about optimizing how much they're spending or how they're pricing in these channels. For influencer marketing, there's just a lot of kind of hearsay and a lot of kind of non-scientific ways that people have gone about saying, oh yeah, you need to partner with a micro-influencer, you need to partner with a mega-influencer. What yeah. I think kind of rigorously quantifying the follower elasticity does is it lets you think about this question from a data-driven strategic perspective. It gives you this thing, this quantity, which is directly related to basically, like I said before, the bang for your buck. And so when you think about then optimizing this influencer strategy, it's less fluffy. It becomes more just like sort of the kinds of strategic decisions you would make in your other marketing decisions, which is you want to think about kind of, okay, the cost benefit of investing in this particular partnership. And I think thinking in terms of elasticities gives a really kind of concrete, like I said, rigorous way of doing that. But it also is kind of a flexible tool. So like I mentioned before, there's not really like a one-size-fits-all strategy that we find in our research. We find that the follower elasticity varies quite a bit depending on the type of content that you're posting, the type of campaign that you want to run. And so I think by introducing this as kind of a KPI that you should care about, it also gives you a way of thinking about how does that KPI vary depending on the things that we're doing with our brand, with our content, these sorts of things. So you can then kind of use it as the basis for experimenting, for thinking about kind of, you know, how different decisions result in sort of different outcomes for your campaigns. And so it's really about bringing influencer marketing kind of to the same level as other types of data-driven marketing.
Yeah, and I guess it sounds like from what you've kind of laid out here that maybe in the past not enough of the decisions have been made using that type of mindset to begin with.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of this is anecdotal, but sort of if you kind of just go Google, you know, mega versus micro influencers, a lot of the kind of press you'll see, a lot of discussion you'll see, it makes some degree of sense, but it's very often not sort of quantified from actual data, right? So you'll see talk about, you know, small-scale influencers, micro-influencers are more authentic, and so they'll be better for your brand. And indeed, actually, we find something like that. We do find that kind of one of the reasons why micro-influencers tend to have higher follower elasticity is that they generate more engagement with their followers, which leads to more sharing, which leads to more impressions on a particular video. It also affects how TikTok's algorithm works. But the thing is, kind of without sort of rigorously quantifying kind of the link between sort of what you're doing by investing in followers and the outcomes of that, like the popularity, the views of the videos that you're getting, it's really difficult to kind of disentangle how much of this is just, yeah, that sounds right, versus, yeah, that is right.
Ryan, great to have you with us today. Thank you very much for your time today. All the best.
Thanks, Dan. It was a pleasure.
You got it. Ryan Du, who is an assistant professor of marketing here at the Wharton School. To explore more content from the Wharton School, visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.